Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the preaching of God's Word from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon, Ohio, with Pastor Lance Wise. I want to take just a moment and invite you to attend one of our services in person. We gather Sundays at 10:30, and all are welcome. If you'd like more information about our church, please visit our website, havenheightsbaptist.org, or see us on Facebook. It happened so fast. And I felt the jolt before I realized that I was rear-ended. I wasn't hurt, I was only shaken up. We both got out of our cars, we went to the side of the road, we began talking to one another. It was an honest mistake, and he clearly felt bad for the damage that he caused. I suggested that we call the police in order to get a police report. And he said, well, you can call them if you like, but they're probably not going to come. He said, they usually don't come to accidents that don't have injuries. So in disbelief, I called my insurance agent, and my agent confirmed there was no point in calling the police. He said, Michigan is a no-fault state. And I asked in disbelief, what do you mean by no fault? And he said, well, yeah, the government doesn't really care who caused the accident. Each person has to use their own insurance to pay for the damage. And I asked, are you serious? I said, I know exactly who was at fault. I was rear-ended. And he tried to clarify, and he said, well, you know, the state just doesn't think it's worth their time to investigate and to make a determination in such minor things. He said, again, you're just going to have to use the insurance that you have. And then a few days later, I talked with my agent again, and he said, because of the accident, your premium is going to go up, and so it's probably better off if you just pay for it out of pocket. This morning, we're going to be looking at laws concerning property. And many times, governments say personal property is just a trivial matter. And many times, people who violate the property of others are not forced to and choose not to make it right. Our text this morning is all about property. And we will see this morning that personal property matters to God because everything matters to God. Exodus chapter 22, beginning in verse 1. Whoever steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it must pay back 5 head of cattle for the ox and 4 for the sheep. If a thief is caught breaking in at night and is struck a fatal blow, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. But if it happens after sunrise, the defender is guilty of bloodshed. Anyone who steals must certainly make restitution, but if they have nothing, they must be sold to pay for their theft. If the stolen animal is found alive in their possession, whether ox or donkey or sheep, they must pay it back double. If anyone grazes their livestock in a field or vineyard and lets them stray, and they graze in someone else's field, the offender must make restitution from the best of their own field or vineyard. If a fire breaks out and spreads into thorn bushes so that it burns shocks of grain or standing grain or the whole field, the one who started the fire must make restitution. If anyone gives a neighbor silver or goods for safekeeping, and they are stolen from the neighbor's house, the thief, if caught, must pay it back double. But if the thief is not found, the owner of the house must appear before the judges, and they must determine whether the owner of the house has laid hands on the other person's property. In all cases of illegal possession of an ox, a donkey, a sheep, a garment, or any lost property about which someone else says, "This is mine," both parties are to bring their cases before the judges. The one whom the judges declare as guilty must pay back double to the other. If anyone gives a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any other animal to a neighbor for safekeeping, and it dies or is injured or is taken away while no one else is looking, the issue between them will be settled by taking an oath before the Lord that the neighbor did not lay hands on the other person's property. The owner is to accept this, and no restitution is required. But if the animal is stolen from the neighbor, restitution must be made to the owner. If it was torn to pieces by a wild animal, the neighbor shall bring the remains as evidence and shall not be required to pay for the torn animal. If anyone borrows an animal from their neighbor and it is injured or dies while the owner is not present, they must make restitution. But if the owner was with the animal, the borrower will not have to pay. The animal was hired. The money paid for it to hire the animal covers the loss. For those taking notes this morning, first, the big idea. The big idea is this: God cares about personal property. God cares about personal property. And then three sections to guide our time. Number one, God cares about small things. God cares about small things. Number two, there really aren't small things. There really aren't small things. And then number three, Jesus will restore all things. Jesus will restore all things. We begin with a simple idea that God cares about personal property. For the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about human rights. So we've been talking both about abuse and flourishing. And it makes sense to all of us that God cares about people, that he cares when people are harmed and abused, and he wants all people to flourish. But now we move on to something different. We move on to material things. Property, possessions, stuff. And notice the specificity in the text we just read. The level of detail is the same for our property as it was for abuse and suffering. Now, in comparison, property seems pretty small to the things that we've been talking about, and so we must notice something right off the bat, and that God is concerned with small things. So that's number one. God cares about small things. Now, why does God care about our stuff? Why does God have this level of concern regarding our property? Answer, because of worship. As we read this text, most of their property were animals. These verses talk a lot about oxen and sheep. And if we remember the Old Testament, we remember that the people of God were commanded to sacrifice their oxen and their sheep. And if the animal was stolen and killed, they were deprived of their ability to worship. God cared about their property for the sake of worship, and God cares about our property today for the exact same reason, for the sake of worship. You see, no one worships in a vacuum. We worship in real space, in real time, in a real universe. Sometimes we assume that worship only happens within these four walls, within this hour, once a week on Sunday morning. And yet, as we go through the Bible, we see that we're to use our entire lives for worship. And so how do you use your life for worship? Well, you use your things. We can use our cars for worship. So yes, use your car to get to church in the morning. But also use your car to deliver meals to the sick, or to visit the weak, or even to listen to Christian radio. We can use our TVs and our computers for worship. We can use our TVs to watch things that glorify God, and that's more than simply TV preachers. But to use our TVs and our computers for programming that cause us to notice the goodness of God throughout his entire creation. Our possessions, our stuff, our opportunities to worship God. And when we're stolen from, so is the opportunity to use that possession for worship. And so notice that God naturally addresses stealing in verses 1 through 4. And he tells us that the thief, verse 1 and verse 3, must pay back the object plus more. If he took the object, if he took the ability to worship God with the object must be repaid, must be returned plus more, so that the one who is wronged can make up for the worship that was missed. Now that all seems pretty obvious and straightforward. But what about when it's not so cut and dried? And that's most of the time, right? Seldom when a thief steals is he immediately caught and repays what he took. When it comes to matters of personal property, it's seldom cut and dry. And if you don't believe me, all you got to do is watch Judge Judy. Most of Judge Judy's cases are about property. And if you've ever seen the show, you know that when it comes to our stuff, it gets pretty messy pretty quickly. And verse 7 begins to talk about these types of issues. Verse 7 is something like this. A man's going to be going out of town for a couple days. And so he asks his friend to watch his stuff. But when he comes back, the valuable things are no longer there. They went missing. Now that seems strange to us, but this is a pretty common thing. There's no banks during this time. And so if you left your house, you wouldn't leave your valuables unattended. Most likely, you would ask your friend to watch it. So just imagine yourself in the moment. You're going to leave town for the day, and you have a chunk of silver that you've been hanging on to for a rainy day. You go to your friend's house, and you say, I'm going to be leaving town for the day. Would you mind watching my chunk of silver so that no one steals it? And your friend says, sure, I'll watch that silver while you're gone. You come back later that night. I'm here for my silver. And he says, the strangest thing happened. It's now gone. I think somebody came and I stole it. Now, hopefully your friend is telling the truth. And hopefully, verse 7, the criminal is caught and the criminal pays it back plus double for a fine. But what if the criminal's not found? You would, of course, naturally wonder, is my friend actually the criminal? And you would wonder, what do I do? Because it's my word against his word, and he says it's gone, and he's not going to pay it back. If you've ever been to Cedar Point, you've ever noticed that before you get on the ride, they have these bins against the wall that you can place your valuables into. In these little bins, you can put your sunglasses, your sandals, your purses, whatever. Anything that you don't want to lose on the ride, you can put into these little bins. And then over the bins, they have this sign that says, Cedar Point is not responsible for lost or stolen or misplaced items. And it's fascinating. They say, yeah, we're happy to keep your stuff, but we're not responsible for it. If it turns up missing, that's your problem. And that's typical. It's typical that when our stuff comes up missing, when it's lost or when it's stolen, it's typical that nobody really cares. But not here. Not Exodus 22. God makes it clear, when your stuff is missing, I care. And so he says, verse 9, the one wronged and the keeper of the valuable should appear before these judges that I'm going to set up, and these judges are going to make a determination. And if the judges rules the friend took the money or the possession, he's going to pay it back double. He's going to pay it back because he's actually the thief. God cares about our stuff. And so verse 10 is essentially the same idea, but just a different category. A person's planning to go away, but they're not going to leave a chunk of silver this time. They're actually going to leave their animal, and their friend's going to feed and care for the animal, and then they get back, and the same thing happens, and the animal's now dead. Verse 12, they make an oath together before the Lord. And the one who watched the animal makes the oath. I didn't have a lamb chop for dinner, and I didn't have a steak. I'm telling the truth before God. And verse 12, God is invoked because they both believe that God cares. God cares about our stuff. Do you know what a comfort that is this morning? If our God is concerned with our stuff, if he's concerned with our property and our possessions, is he not more concerned with our health? And is he not more concerned with our well-being and our safety? And is he not more concerned with our children? Answer, of course he is. And so don't miss this massive point of the text. If God is concerned with our stuff, the seemingly small things and compared to so many bigger things, then he cares about the bigger things all the more. There is nothing that God does not care about. He is concerned about all things because in God's eyes there are no small things. That's second. There aren't really small things. Upon first reading, this chapter seems like such small and trivial matters. We can imagine these real life situations and say, well, it's just a little white lie. When my neighbor was gone, I ate his sheep. I just wanted a lamb chop. I let my ox graze in my neighbor's field. He wasn't in his field. He probably wasn't even going to use his field. He's probably not even going to notice that my ox ate his grass. I didn't return all my neighbor's stuff. You know, he asked me to keep it, and I should get a little off the top for keeping it for him. I borrowed my neighbor's ox, and yeah, I might have drove him too hard, and maybe that's why he got sick. But maybe he was sick before he even came to me. So much of this stuff would just be easy to rationalize. And it sounds so small, and yet it's not small at all. When I was in the sixth grade, one of my classmates got this lump on his eye. And the doctor said it was just a small thing. They said it's most likely the skin condition, and so they gave him some ointments. And when the lump didn't go away, they said, well, it's probably a spider bite. And so they gave him some different medicines. And when it didn't go away, they said, well, the small thing is maybe actually a big thing. And the lump was leukemia, cancer. For so long, the doctor said, oh, this is just a small thing. But the small thing was a symptom of a larger underlying problem. And lest we think that our stuff or the stuff of others, giving, taking, borrowing, lending, lest we think all of that is small, it actually reveals what's going on beneath the surface. So verse 1 talks about stealing. And the reason anyone steals is because we want more. And we want more because we don't believe that God has given us enough. And when a heart believes that God hasn't given me enough, then we take more. And that's a lack of faith in God. That's no small thing. Verse 2, if a thief is caught breaking in at night and has struck a fatal blow, the defender is not guilty of murder. But if it happens after sunrise, the defender is guilty of murder. If a thief breaks in at night, you can defend yourself, and if he dies, he dies. But during the day, it's different. Their homes were made of dirt. And someone who wanted to break into a house would actually use a shovel and dig down through the roof. During the day, you can hear the guy up on the roof. And during the day, you can see the dirt start to fall from the ceiling. And during the day, you can see the pinprick of light, and then you can see the hole only get bigger and bigger. And during the day, you can say, hey, what are you doing on my roof with the shovel? You can't simply wait for the guy to fall through the ceiling and then kill him. That's murder. And murder is no small thing. Verse 4, if my neighbor's sheep somehow ends up in my pen, I don't know how it happened. He just ended up over here, so I'm just going to take him as my own. Verse 5, I accidentally let my ox graze in your pasture. I don't know how that happened. I don't know. He goes where he wants to go. Who knows? That's most likely coveting. I deserve what you have. I deserve your animal. I deserve your field. Perhaps your animals are healthy and mine are sick. That shouldn't happen to me. I should just take one of yours. That'd be fair. Your field is lush and mine is dead. You don't deserve success, but I do. That's coveting. And coveting reveals a heart that says, I should be God because I know what I need. That's no small thing. Verse 6 talks about an unintentional fire. It was common to start a fire in order to clear the land. So they'd cut down the crop, and then they'd start this fire to burn off the rest of the stubble. And as we can imagine, sometimes the fire got out of control, and sometimes the fire would spread from one field to another. And it'd be easy to say, well, that's your field, and that's your problem. Verse 14 is all about borrowing from a neighbor. Suppose you borrow your neighbor's ox to plow your land, and then the ox get hurt. It'd be easy to say, your animal, your problem. Those things seem small, but it's pride. It's to say, I'm number one. I can't be concerned with your things. The only thing that matters is what's mine. You don't matter. Only I matter. Not a small thing. All of these things reveal the human heart. And so often it is when it comes to our stuff. And when it comes to how we view the stuff of others, it reveals what's going on in here. You see, the problem is never only the outward action. The real problem is the underlying attitude. Not the outward action. The real problem is the underlying attitude. And the way we interact with the seemingly small things in life are big things because they reveal what we actually think in here and reveal whether we are aligned with God or against God. Third point, Jesus will restore all things. If we look at these verses, we notice that nearly every verse has this one word in it, restitution. And restitution means to make things right, to return things to how they were, to pay it back. So verse 1, if a man steals an ox and the ox is killed, the thief has to pay it back 5 times. Restitution includes not only replacing the ox, but paying a fine for the trouble of replacing what has been stolen. Replace it 5 times. Because it is a massive deal to train an ox. It takes years to get an ox to respond to the farmer and for the ox to anticipate what his task is to be. If we look at these verses, we see all of them contain this idea of restitution. Things have to be made right. So verse 3, the thief must make restitution. And if the thief can't afford restitution, he has to work off the debt. He can't say, well, I'm sorry, I don't have the money, and so, you know, you're just going to be out of luck. No, the debt can't be left unpaid. Verse 5, even if it is somehow an accident, and you let your ox graze in the neighbor's field, or verse 6, you catch your neighbor's field on fire, you must make restitution. The damage must be paid for, accident or not. Verse 12, you borrow something and you ruin it. You must make restitution. The lender is entitled to a new object. He's entitled to his things. In God's law, there must be justice. The offender must make things right. The offended must get what is right. no exceptions. And so some pretty obvious and straightforward application. If we've stolen property, we need to pay it back. If we've broken things that are borrowed, we need to pay it back. And probably more than one of us needs to make restitution. Some of us need to make things right. But what about when we're unable to make it right? And many times it can't fully be restored, can't fully be undone. You know, we can return a stolen item, but you can't return stolen trust. And we can pay for things that are broken, but no one can purchase sentimentality. Many times we cannot restore all that has been broken, all that has been harmed, all that has been injured. After World War I, Germany was forced to pay massive reparations. And the other country said, you started this war, you're the problem, so you're going to pay it all back. And the required price was so great that many Germans starved to death. And those that didn't starve lost all their money, the economy was ruined. And no restitution was made. The war couldn't be undone, and it actually led to World War II. Or how about after 9/11? The U.S. government sanctioned many nations around the world, and then the U.S. government actually paid out massive settlements to the victims, but no restitution was made. The terror couldn't be unwound. People were dead, and the world was forever changed. Many times, restitution can't be made. Our God is the God who requires justice and rightness and fairness and perfection. And we as human beings have made such a hash of it through our stealing and through our coveting and through our taking of what is not ours that human beings can never bring the restitution that God demands. And so we end with this. Praise be to God that Jesus is coming again to set all things right. You see, that's why Jesus is coming. He is coming again because the restitution that he demands can never be fulfilled in us. He comes to bring full and final restitution. And in Revelation 21, we see this restitution. We see that he will usher in the new city, the heavenly Jerusalem, and he will remake the heavens and the earth, and he will make all things new, all things, not only the spiritual, but also the physical, the universe, the world, molecules, atoms, everything that once was will be restored to perfection. And then he will wipe away every tear because there will be nothing to cry about. All things restored. Full and final restitution is made. And not made by us because we could never do it, but made by Jesus Christ because he is the one who will set all things right.
You've been listening to the preaching of God's Word from Haven Heights Baptist Church with Pastor Lance Wise. If you're looking for a church home, consider joining us on Sundays at 10:30 for worship, Sunday school at 9:30. For more information, find us at havenheightsbaptist.org or see us on Facebook.